That was really great. I think we're going to give a little bit extra time to the Peru team, so I'll just call on Greg right now to come on up.
There we go. How's that? That better? Old kid, he's pretty sharp. He is. Well, as most of you know, we had the opportunity to go at the end of January and the 21st to go to Peru to help out with a construction project down there. There was eight of us that ended up going on this team we were on, and there was a few more that were down there, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But this was the team that went. There was Blue, Babineau, and then Glenn Averill. He's from the Valley. He spoke at Focus last year. Myself, Fenno, Laura, Oral, Thomas, and that's Chris DeJager. He's Mark's boy, and of course, Gregor. Chris stayed with us through the thick and thin of the whole time we were there, so we sure wanted to have him on it too. So we're just going to skip through some of the things that we did. This thing's supposed to be working here. Press the right one. There we go. Well, this is the building. When we got there, this is what the building was. It was all steel structure. There was hardly any wood in it at all. So every time we had to do something, it was new for most of us. And even though the building looked like that, when we got there, we were looking it over. There was one man that had been there before us and another fellow, Leland. He was there helping, but he had his appendix rupture on him while he was there. And he had to get it operated on, and his appendix had to come out, so he was actually no good to them down there as far as the physical end of it goes. But just a little note that you have to pay for everything when you're in the hospital in Peru. Mark was with Leland for 4 days, and every time Leland needed a test or a drug, Mark would have to go down to the pharmacy, pay it, come back up, and they would do that. And then when another test came, they did, and when it was all back and forth, but Leland was very happy when it was all said and done. He was in the hospital for 4 days, got his appendix out, and it cost him $1,200. So he was very happy to the Lord for that. One thing about the building here, when we got there and we got looking on Saturday, we realized that not all was the way it seemed. The crew that were there before us, these fellas, they framed in the windows, they framed in the doors, and they weren't even close to what the doors and the window sizes were. They put in all the electrical boxes up in the ceilings, and by the time we got there, when we started on Monday, it was Tuesday afternoon before we started going forward again. We had to change all the windows sizes. We had to change all the door sizes. The tidiness of work over there, let me say to the least, is it doesn't matter. It just, whatever it is, it is. And you'd look at the electrical sockets, you know, there'd be lights like this going down each side, and one would be here, the other one would be over 3 inches this way, and the other one would be over 4 inches this way. And so we knew when it was all said and done, we were going to be looking at it. So we took the time to do the building and make it right. That was one reason we went down. The other reason, obviously, why we went down was for this. This is Mark and Kim DeJager and their family and their extended family. So we want to go down to be an encouragement to them and to show them that we were interested in the work that they were doing. These three boys, 3, 5, and a year, 2, 5, 2, 3, and 5. Oh man, my name. What's their names, guys? It left me already.
Edwin is the youngest. Naeem is the oldest, and Jorge is the middle.
Edwin, Naeem, and Jorge. Them are the three kids. Now, he got an email from Mark the other night, and he asked me to ask for prayer as far as these three children go, because they are getting physically wore out with these children. They're getting tired, they're getting pooped, and Chris, which is their oldest boy, Chris right here, he's going to be staying back in Canada when they come home in June, and Mark was hoping to get some time to spend with Chris. So these three boys, they didn't have anywhere to go. When they came to the orphanage didn't have room for them, and Mark and Kim felt sorry that, and they thought that they didn't want them going back to wherever they were going to go, so Mark and Kim took them into their home, and they've had them for 6 months now, but it's time for them to move on. They feel that the Lord would have it that way, but as luck would have as the Lord would have it, that three kids got adopted here last week from the orphanage, and it sure looks like these three kids are going to really slide into their place, because one thing you got to remember about Peru is that they won't break the families up. These three children, when they go, if they get adopted, they will have to get adopted by one family. And the three children that got adopted range from age a year and a half, probably Hugo was 9 or 10, probably somewhere in that area. So when they get adopted, they have to go as a crew. So, and another interesting thing I found out on Thursday night, I've been emailing Tom Clark a little bit back and forth about things, and I got one picture of him. We didn't have many of him. I found one, but he's the man that runs the orphanage over there. He basically owns it. And it's a private orphanage, but the government will come to him for children and everything to try to get the children to stay. But when I was just inquiring about, you know, adopting children, and Tom emailed me back, and he said they had a convention. They called it the Hague Convention a few years ago, and there were certain countries that Peru signed a letter with that children could be adopted, and I couldn't believe it, but Canada is not one of them. So if any of us were interested in adopting a child from Peru, we couldn't do it. And I asked Thomas, I said, is there any getting around it? And he said, nope. He said, that's just the way it is. So. But pray for Mark and Kim. They've got their hands full. They're certainly in their element now. School started last Monday, this Monday past. That's when their school year starts. Mark is in charge of all the curriculum. And he finds it a big responsibility, because over there, it was not very structured. The teachers weren't structured. The program wasn't structured. So it's all new for him to get it under control. So he's under the pressure right now, because one thing, if you know Mark at all, he'll want to do a good job. And with that comes a lot of work. So this was our flights down. Oh, they were long. Man, they were long. A flight to Newark was only a couple hours. Flight from there to Lima was 8 hours. And then we had a 6-hour layover in Lima to get to Chiclayo, where we were going. This scene here, it was common. We got a lot of time in the airports, we did. So I thought this picture was kind of nice when I was reading, looking through them the other night to pick some out, that even our young people are sitting there in the Word at the airport. So that was an encouragement to me when I looked at it. It was. Once again, just a few air shots. I just want to stress the time we spent between flying and airports. I'll tell you now, going there wasn't too bad. We left on Friday morning, Moncton, around 4:30 in the morning, and it was all Fano's fault, but we were putting her back to the rotary before we realized we weren't close to the airport, so back we go. So I blamed it on him, even though I was driving, but yeah, my sense of direction is just fair. It is, but anyways, we got down there pretty quick, because we left on Friday morning, we were down there Saturday morning by 8-ish or so, but coming home, I'll jump the gun, we left Mark's place in the morning, because the only time we could get a flight was out of Lima that night, unless we want to spend another $300, which none of us did. So we left in the morning at Mark's place at 7:30. We stayed there for the day, but the fellow who owns the orphanage, Tom, his brother lived in Lima, and that's a whole other story there, but long story short, we stayed with him, although we tortured Thomas most of the day, but we got there, and we waited till probably about 12 o'clock that night, jumped on the plane, because it was supposed to go to Lima. A storm was coming. We ended up going to Houston. Houston, we waited for 2 hours, ended up getting to Newark, got stuck in Newark overnight, and by this time, so coming home, it took us over 64 hours just to get home, so we had seen enough of the airport by then. So when we landed at the orphanage, this is the picture of the front door there. And as you can see up top here, I guess you can't see it very well, but it says Strong Tower. So actually, the orphanage, it's a split thing. The orphanage is separate from the school, and the school is separate from the orphanage, but they're in the same compound. So it's kind of the same but different. But this, that's just us getting out of the van. But that door there behind Mark, you're not allowed to go in or out of that door unless you're locked in and locked out. So in order to leave, they've got to come, and somebody, one of the maintenance guys, has got to unlock the door in order for you to leave, because they don't want children coming and going. And it's a very secure spot, as we'll see some pictures later on, that the wall around this compound is anywhere between 12 and 14 foot brick wall. And it's big, so there's a lot of room for expansion. But it's in a very poor, I don't even know if there is a rich part of town in this place, but it's in a very poor spot. But security, I know Chris went out there one day, as we'll see, the boys stayed across the road from this place, and Chris didn't lock the door. And I can still remember yet them giving them a little bit of a touch, because that door was wide open for any kid to come in or out. And the going out is the one they're concerned about. Coming in, the kids won't do them much harm. But this is the compound that we stayed in. Back here is where their chapel is. That's it. There's no door. We don't have to worry about the furnace being on and the heat and the icicles and all that. It's pretty warm there. The temperature when we were there was anywhere between 30 and 40 degrees. On the hottest day, it was pretty near 40. Mark said that if you're out in the sun, you'll burn in 7 minutes. So by the time the week, two weeks were over or thereabouts, Glenn Averill, he was dark, because he was trying to get out into the sun, and somebody like myself, I was just hiding from it. So, but it's a very nice little meeting that they have here, and this is where we stayed back in the corner back here. It was a Sunday school room that they took a few bunk beds in, and we'll talk about that a bit later on. That was our thorn in the flesh. I was thinking last week when I was watching Wade LeBlanc's video, I said, man alive, we're going to get up there next week. What am I going to say? And I got thinking to myself, we didn't have it near as rough as he did. And then it hit me today coming back from Upton we were in, and I thought, you know, I said, Lord, you had Wade where you wanted him, and you had us where you wanted us. So, you know, if you're in the Lord's will, that's all that counts, really. And the more I thought about it, the better I felt, because I seen what Wade put up with last week, and we were in the Hilton compared to that. But as you walk through the compound here, we'll go through the door where Laura's standing, and this is the outside. Now, the grass here, Bob and Janet, they're from Florida. They're one of the house parents, and they have to be in their 60s, and they're looking after five or six children, and they're not young at all. Bob, when we went there in May last year, Bob, there was hardly a piece of grass in that land. It's dry. Man, it's dry there. The annual rainfall in Peru is less than an inch and a half a year. So when you get it, you get it in a hurry, and then you don't see it again. And when we went in May, Kim said, you islanders coming, she said, you brought the rain with you. Because when we went in May, the first two mornings it rained. I couldn't believe it. So, but it's, you know, by 10 o'clock, it's drying up and the rain's gone. But Bob's been working on this grass all along just to keep the dust down, because it's just like a dust bowl there, the whole place. So he's doing a good job. This, when we went in May, I remember Gregor and I just here, we were throwing clay out here just to try to get a bit of grass. There was none of this at all. So he's come a long way in a year. This is the house that they stay in. Down below here is an apartment, and up top is an apartment. We have some pictures of the family down below, but they have their own normal family, Roberto, Alberto, and Rosa, in the bottom apartment here, and upstairs is where Janet and Bob stay, and they have, this is where the children from the orphanage live. They live in with these families, and this building here is in behind it, which should be starting this month or next month. Right behind here, they're going to build another one. That's the project that they're going to start. Obviously, the Lord is blessing them. Tom says they need more room. They're getting tired of just turning children away. He said on the average, he can turn anywhere between 3 and 5 children away each week that the government wants them to come to the orphanage. So it's quite a ministry that they have going there. But they hope to get this building started in the next month or so. And it's a lot of work, because these pillars that you see there, these stanchions, they have to be poured and then left alone for 30 days. So they just get the local fellas to do that and for the cement to cure, and then they're off and running to build the rest of it. There's a lot of stone work. When we went there in May, there was none of this top here. And now up there is where they have their laundry services, and and their clotheslines and stuff like that. But you can see the wall around here. This goes around the whole compound, so it's anywhere between 12 and 14 feet deep. I want to show this picture. This is what started Mark and Kim on their pilgrimage to Peru. They want to take their family down 3 years ago for, we'll call it a vacation, but they wanted to take their family down just to see what it would be like for a couple of weeks. So this is what they did. They built this project, and there wasn't a whole lot of tools to work with them, but that was, they did a few things, but that was one of the projects that they did. And them starting the building of this little playground was the start of the Lord calling them to Peru. So it doesn't start with a big bang. It just starts with simple little things, and if you're sensitive to the Lord, then you can pick that stuff up. Once again, we're standing on the roof, looking over the buildings. There's rice fields in back here, a lot of rice. Rice and sugar cane are two of the major commodities that Peru has. And but when you look around at this land, like, it's dry and barren, and that's pretty well the whole countryside, unless you're seeing a rice field or you're seeing sugar cane, one of the two. It's dry and dusty. It is. Just another picture there. There's a picture of, from the roof again. This was the first schoolhouse they built a year ago, and in back is the one we're getting along pretty good at it then, but that's the second one. And I was talking to Tom when I emailed him, and he said hopefully next January, December, that they actually want to build another one on the other side of that for another school grade. So that's something that maybe we can look forward to. Here was the hub of the operation, our kitchen. A lot of stuff happened here. Believe it or not, that looks tidy, and that's the way it basically stayed. You get six or eight fellas living in that one little spot. We were keeping her clean, but one of the things that it did is when we got there, Tom said it would cost you $20 a day to stay in the orphanage, so that's what we paid them, and they fed us. And the fridge was always full, mostly with fruit and with stuff like that. One thing I think I told the guys that worked there, they have this... You must have seen them Yoplait yogurts, the little ones that you can get in the store. Well, they sell them over there. They call it Gloria, but it's yogurt, and they make it in 2-liter jugs like we'd buy a milk jug here. And, man, it was good. They could hardly keep that in the fridge for us. So between that and the fruit's good there, but as I said the last time we were here, anytime you want fruit, it goes to the sink. You fill the sink up with water. You take a cap full of Javex. You put the Javex in the water. Roll the fruit around for a little bit. Take it out, dry it, and you get the enjoyment of eating Javex apples. So but that's the way it is. You can't eat the fruit without disinfecting it, because if you do, you're going to be not so good a shape as far as the tummy goes. Even bananas, they're warning us, when you eat a banana, peel a banana and eat it. Don't peel a banana, grab it with this hand and then put it in your mouth, because you're grabbing the outside of the banana and then you're grabbing the inside. So that's one thing that we had to be careful of. But beautiful sunsets there, my land. You could sit out at night, and, you know, by that time our work was winded down. Most of our hours, another one here, there was just the different colors of skies was amazing. But our hours, we put in some long hours in there. We hit the road running. Saturday, we were just getting off the plane. We seen what we wanted. Sunday, obviously, was the chapel and no work. And then Monday morning, one thing all of us lacked, and I'm sure the guys that are here between Oral, Thomas, and Gregor, we lacked sleep. And we were struggling for sleep. It was quite a time, it was. And we would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. It was light at 6, and we'd be all sitting at the bed looking at each other, just waiting for daylight to break as we go to work, because we couldn't sleep. So we put in some long hours. I think I figured it out last night that between the eight of us, and I wasn't counting Laura, because Laura was busy, and she was mostly with the children all the time. There was days go by where we wouldn't see Laura till 8 or 9 o'clock that night. You wouldn't even see her, because she was out and about helping out with all the children, doing whatever needed to be done, whatever was asked of her, she would. But between the guys, we put in about 650 some man hours, so we hit the hammer down when we were there. So, but it was good. This is their chapel on Sunday morning. It is not a big crew, a very young assembly. It's only 5 years old, so there's some growing pains along the way. But this Carlos back here, I wish I could understand him, because he was a ball of fire. He was, and he'd get the kids wound up, and he'd get them going, but just a brother that loves the Lord, I know that, and, you know, very kind, and they're very compassionate people. They are. Now, I know Wade LeBlanc have it tough. This was our thorn in the flesh. It was. Believe it or not, them beds look comfortable. And I was laying on one, looking up. All I could see was Flexi Plus. And I'm thinking, what's flexing about this bed? It is. They were, I'm not exaggerating, they were as hard as that floor. And the weren't they, Earl? So I don't know. None of us were sleeping, and we know because it was because of the beds. We were struggling. There were brand new mattresses pretty near, but we didn't have it quite as rough as the boys had it here, and I'll show you in a bit. This wasn't an uncommon picture. You know, we're driving around in our minivans and our SUVs and going to and fro, and there's a fellow with a mule going down the street in an old wagon. But that, you know, it wasn't uncommon to see that. And it was, you see the houses in back. I'll show you some pictures later on, but it's pretty rough living. And you know, the average house might be 20 by 30 inside or 30 by 30, some with a cement floor, some maybe not with a cement floor. And, you know, the conditions are fair at best. I like this picture. One of the industries there in Peru is sugarcane, and that's a sugarcane mill. And Mark said it's a very old mill. So you can see, I didn't get a real good picture of the fresh stuff, but back here, this sugarcane, I know I mentioned it before, but it will grow probably 8 to 10 feet tall. I'd certainly get lost walking around it myself. They wait for it to get ripe, and then just acres and acres as far as you can see. As soon as it's ripe, they'll get it on a windy day, they'll stay upwind, and they'll light it, and it'll burn for days. And then once the burn is over, that's when they go in and collect the sugar cane. So the sugar cane has a whole bunch of leaves on it sprouting out, and when the burn is over, it's just one big long stalk. So that was one of their industries. This here was a UFO we encountered. It was. That was right across from our hotel room. When we first got there, we spent the night. And Mark's, instead of going out to the orphanage, we spent a couple nights at the hotel. But these water cisterns are everywhere. That's how they heat their water, or they get their water. They fill these cisterns up, and then the heat of the sun will warm them. Some people have warm showers, and you know, even out at the orphanage, we never had a hot shower. Not that it mattered, because it was so hot anyways, but these cisterns are everywhere. You can get big ones like that, or just little ones that are, you know, no taller than me. Here's a typical picture of downtown. Horses obviously weren't uncommon. Very busy spot. People coming and going everywhere. I don't have a picture here, but on a street corner like this, you'd see people out selling some kind of soy milk or something. They'd just be sitting on the side of the street, and people were going up, and they'd give them, you know, whatever money it cost, and the people would get the glass, and they'd pour it, and you'd be sitting there watching, and they'd just stand there, you know, take them a minute to drink it, and as soon as they were done drinking, they'd walk away. The lady would dip down in a 5-gallon bucket of water, take the glass, swish it around, and just throw the water out and set it back up for the next fella to drink. So it was just fair at best. It was. But one thing about our dollar, when we get over there, it went a long way. Our dollar was worth almost 3.2 to 3.3 times more money than their dollar. So it stretched a long way. We went out to eat one night. There's a picture here somewhere. And there were 17 of us that went out to eat at a Swiss chalet. It was the type of thing. We came in there one night just to go out to dinner with Mark and Kim, and that's what it basically was. And we ate for, there were 17 of us, and we ate for, it was under $100 Canadian anyways for 17 of us. So I think we ate for $4 or $5 a piece, so it's pretty cheap there. I think there's the van that we travel around with, and the only reason I'm showing that, because believe it or not, you can get 17 people inside that van. Even though there's probably only but 8 seat belts. But seat belts were only rules if you're in the front seat. Other than that, you didn't have to have a seat belt on. But we had a lot of people coming and going in that little van, and it sees a lot of miles on it. Another thing that I found out, and Blue told me this, I didn't really know, but we took a picture of this church, and there's Catholic church all over this place. But where you find the city square, you will find the church. And where you find the Catholic church, you will find the city square. And even whether it was in Chicleo or Pavna or Oviedo, I can't say these Spanish names, but we went there one day just for a look. It was on a Sunday morning. we went up, it was hot, and we were looking for something to do because they don't have church there till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So all the guys went up and we sat around and just sat on the city square. But wherever the square is, the church is, and it's the central part of the city. So a lot of Catholic church is there. This was the market that you could go to. This is not the best picture, but believe it or not, it goes back all the way back here. It's a city block. And when you go into that market, it's a one-stop shop. It's almost better than Walmart, it is, because you can go there, you can get your clothes, you can get your shaving cream, you can go get fish, you can get potatoes, you can get whatever you want, T-shirts, anything. And batteries, light bulbs, it don't matter. If you're inside this market, then you're going to get it. And I know Glenn was buying T-shirts for his kids when he was there, and he sent $7 and 3 T-shirts, so it was pretty cheap. But one thing you got to remember about when you're in Peru, there's no quality there. It's just fair at best, and that's the truth. Mark could even tell you that they make it, but they make it cheap, and therefore it's not meant to last. But I should go back there. One thing I did want to mention here, these little yellow taxis, 1.8 million people in the city where Mark and them live, roughly, and there's 40,000 of them taxis. There is. They are coming and going everywhere. It's unbelievable. They're just little fireflies type of thing is what they are. But you could go, I'll just take a guess, if you went from the Winslow Irving down, let's say, to the monuments downtown, at best that would probably cost you 3 solis. So, and their solis only worth about 30 cents, a little less probably, so you could go a long way on a taxi ride. This, once again, is just a typical picture where people live. That's homes, you know, some of them. That's the orphanage, I guess, there. I'll get a better picture later on, right there. Them are homes. That's where people live. Like, we're millionaires here, and we just don't know it. You know, we have, if you took any one of our houses of all the people that are here tonight, and you plunked it where this orphanage is, they'd just be looking at you with their eyes dropped, because there's no, you know, there's nothing to compare with. You just go in these little huts, and that's all they are. Brick walls. That wasn't a real good picture, but it was the only one I could find of the sugar cane, but it's growing everywhere. It is. Another thing here, when they're transporting stuff, you can't leave anybody not in the backs of the trucks, no matter what you're moving, because Mark said they'll drive the trucks right up alongside you and start unloading on the move, he said. So there's up here, there's actually 3 fellas on there. You can't see the third fella probably, but I'm not sure what they've got there, corn or something. But every time they go in an open truck, whether it's a pop truck or anything, you will see people on the back. Now, these fellas here, I was going to play the video, but I didn't. But this was the morning we decided to go up to the square before church, and we were coming down the street. And I don't know what these fellas were doing. They were walking somewhere, so we asked them to sing us a song. So this fella with the white shirt on, he started cranking it out, and he sang us a whole song. But I don't know how he kept the tune yet, because the 2 fellas behind him were blowing them horns so loud that but you had no trouble hearing them. But anyways, when they were going to walk away, Fenno and I left them a few bucks and just to say thanks, because a couple of bucks to them would probably be a day's pay. Once again, that's just the market with the taxis. Like, the people are there. When you go in the market, one thing you better make sure of is that your wallet's very tight inside your shirt, your hands are in your pocket, because there's lots of pickpockets there. That's the one thing that Mark told us to keep an eye on, was the pickpockets. And he said, if you see anybody on the street, which is the good guys, he said, if you see them go like that, he said, there's no words has to be said, that keep your head up. There's pickpockets around, because they've been taken. And actually, one of Mark's friends there, the week we were there, he had to phone Mark up to get a drive home because somebody had picked his pocket down the street. It was actually a lady. She tripped, and she pretended that she tripped and that she fell into him, and she knocked him over too. And he said he was sorry, apologized, and realized after she had took off again about 10 or 15 seconds later that his wallet was gone. So it's something that we just have to be careful of. And another thing we wanted to be careful of too was of the girls. I know I got warned the last time. I found it worse the last time, because Gregor and I were the only men. They had all the girls with me, but they just said keep an eye out for them. Mark said make sure you're always looking. So that's one thing we were very sensitive of. Not that they were in any danger, but It's one thing about us. We were monsters compared to the men there, so they're not very big. This is the one afternoon that we took off. The Saturday before we come home, we asked them what they wanted to do. Some want to go to the museum. Somebody want to go to the beach. We worked in the morning. We took the afternoon off because we didn't think it was right if we go and not have some things to do. So us older fogies took off to the museum and then ended up at the beach. But it was cold. The water was freezing, like it was worse than Brackley at the best of times. But if you go a bit more north, Mark said that you'll get into the warm waters. But these people here are out mending their nets. They're actually fishermen. And they were just coming in from a days. These boats here, I think I got another picture of it. Oh, there's the fella in the wagon again. I'll go back for a sec. These boats, they take them in and out of the water every day. And they've got to roll them out on logs, and they got to roll them back in. And I don't know why. I guess the breakwater here is just so hard that they'll pound the boats to death unless they're out really far. But we watched. There was one of these boats going out. They were trying to get it back out into the water when we were there, and they must have struggled for an hour just to get it over the breakwater and out in. And it looked like it was going to tip over about 10 times. But that's what they do for a living. That's what they have to do. They have to go out. Ended up with another picture there of him. These here for you agriculture fellas. This is the combine that harvests the wheat. It's a monster. It is. Little thing on tracks. Got about a 6-foot header on it, and that's it. If you're not going in by hand to do it, then you're going in with this little machine. And all they do is they harvest it, they come to the edge of the field, they just dump it off, and then they go back, and they have people there all the time that are bagging it by hand. So that was a neat little machine. It was. Oh, this was embarrassing. If I'm going to embarrass somebody else, I said I better embarrass myself. When we got there, church was on Sunday, and of course, I didn't have any dress pants with me. So I said to Mark, I said, I got to get a pair of dress pants. So he said, we'll go down to the market and get you a pair. So he takes me down to see this fella. I told him what size I need, and he said, great. And so he came back with a pair, and I said, well, where am I going to try them on? I want to know if they fit. Oh, right here, he says. I said, what do you mean right here? Because people, as many people as you around the market looking. Oh, he takes his blanket, and he draws it over halfway, and there it is. So and here Glenn Averill's over top of me trying to take pictures. So, yeah, what wasn't my best comfort zone right there. But anyways, I was happy. I only paid $14 for the pants, and I still got them. Yeah, cheap. There's one of the, that's a whole scene again of the boats. These things out here, they're the, I don't know how they get in the water, but I don't get a real good picture of them, but they're canoes. And you would wonder how they would even float, but they rent them out when you're at the beach, so. Here's another common sight out where the orphanage is. It's just goats walking by. There's three options for a goat when you're there. You're either giving milk, you're either breeding other goats, or you're either on the supper table. It's one of the three. And they eat a lot of goat over there. They'd eat goat over there like we'd eat roast beef probably. So it's just fair. It is. So. Just more pictures. Down at the market and the busyness of it. I think Oral and Mark were trying to make a deal there with some guy over something. They were. Okay, I thought I better show this picture. Poor Thomas. If he didn't know how to use that cordless drill before we got there, he certainly knew how to use it afterwards, because Thomas was our gyprock guru. He was the fellow who we might go in and screw a few sheets in, and then Thomas would have to come back and do it all. So he was... Actually, that's a rare sight there, because you can see Thomas got a cordless drill here and one there. Cordless drills were of the necessity down there. So if you set one down, they were hard to get because you didn't need a hammer. It was all steel studs. So everything you put together was screwed. It was. So there's him in heavy concentration. That was early on. We were just training him then. It was. He got to use a better drill as he got better. He did. That's one of Thomas's better pictures there we took. You see, fennel cut, this was the stuff that we put on the outside, and believe it or not, there was asbestos in it. So we were really concerned, not that, I wasn't near that department, Thomas and Chris and Fennel and them, they were putting on the outside, I think, but they tried to cut it with a mini grinder, and it wouldn't cut very good, because it was too dusty, and they tried one of them zip saws, we went out and bought that, well, we may as well have went to the dollar store, because that's how long it lasted. So at the end of it, we didn't want that dust flying all over the place, so they found a handsaw that was as dull as a hoe, and Oral jumped on it, and an hour later, I'd never seen a handsaw sharpen before. Oral said the teeth were going both were the same way, a lot of them. But after about an hour, Oral sharpened it up, and that handsaw cut the rest of the sheets. So he did a good job. One thing about the wind there, it's amazing that as hot as it is, it's a dry heat. There's no humidity, so you're not sitting there sweating to death. Unless you're out in the sun, you'll get hot. But for the most part, it's a dry heat, and you are guaranteed by between 12 and 2 o'clock that it was going to be windy. You always had a breeze, no matter what. And you'd think that would come and go, but every day you had a breeze. So that was good. Oh, this was a good shot. The last, poor Fano, I'm abusing the face often, but that's all right. He's not here. He isn't. The last night we were there, we wanted to take Mark and Kim out for dinner. So we said, Kim, you decide wherever you want to go, we'll take you. So we ended up going to this down at the mall. It was kind of a steakhouse. We had a nice meal, but Fennel, he got there, and Audrey and Mark's sister, she was with us, and Audrey was sitting across from Fennel. We went to read the menu, and Fennel's like this looking, and you knew he couldn't read it. Anyways, he said, Audrey, let me see your glasses. So he grabbed Audrey's glasses, and Glenn had to get a picture of it, but it was pretty funny. Now, I want to save the boys the embarrassment of taking the pictures any further of where they stayed, but this looks good. But their conditions were probably a minus 2-star where they stayed. They stayed across the street. We went over for a tour, and we never went back. We didn't. They were, oh, it was, how would you describe it, boys, in one word? There's the one word. Okay, yeah. But we told them they could have stayed in the room where we were, but it was crowded where we were. But the Thomas and Gregor and Chris stayed across the street in one of the houses that Tom owned. But there was a lot of bugs, and it was good for them that they stayed there. Okay, I want to make sure I got a picture of Lauren, because a lot of the pictures you're going to see in the slide, a lot of them are just of the guys working in that. And Laura's ministry was, you know, to help out with the children. She'd come over for a visit one time, once in a while, to see us and what was going on. But there was a lot of times, like we said, we never, you know, Fennel and I'd be talking. It's supper time. Did you see Laura today? No, I didn't. Did you? No, we didn't. So Laura had a great time there. I know she did. So it was good that she could help out in that way. Now, there's a man in mere concentration. Oral kept up with us. I'm going to say young fella because I'm young, but he kept up with us. That was my nicest treat of the week, if you want to know the truth. No, Oral never missed a beat with us. He didn't. You know, he kept up with Thomas. It was great that he was there, because there's a lot of stuff that probably only Fano knew that none of us else knew, but Oral certainly knew what he was doing, whether it was playing it down a door, sharpening a saw, getting the jip rock cut for the boys. But when Oral was tired, man, was he tired. I better not show that too long, but I thought I'd get that digging there. Kind of cute, Irene, isn't he? Okay. This here lady, Rosa, this is another Rosa and her daughter, but this Rosa here, she cooked for us the whole time we were there. She would cook for probably 12 people at the dinner table. We'd go in and eat, and we'd leave, and then she'd cook for the 10 that are in her family right after. So she was getting a double whammy. So she did that. She was as nice a lady as you're going to find. And that's, at the end of it, we thought that the guys from the assembly here should, or the crew that went over, we thought we should get her something. So we asked Kim. We gave her Kim some money, and Kim went and bought her a watch and some jewelry, and that's her getting the gift that we give to her. So she was very happy, and she put it all into perspective for me. Not that I'm blowing her horns by any means, but Kim told me that night, she said, Rosa told me that we have very special friends. And we do care about Mark and Kim. A lot of us do, and we want to be encouragement to them, but we're certainly encouragement to Rosa. This is what we did not get to experience, but Blue did. This was guinea pig at its best. It was. And Blue said, you were probably glad you were gone and didn't get to enjoy it, because he hid this at Jose's place, which is the maintenance guy, and Blue said that on the bottom side of that, it's pretty well all fur. So, yeah. He said I was eating it, and he said I was struggling, but they were all sitting there looking at me, so what were you to do? So Anyways, but Jose raises these right at his house. He raises them so he can eat them. So this is the family. This is Alberto and Rosa. The lady did the cooking. And this is their family. They're all biological kids. And then they have the other kids that are part of the orphans. This little girl here, the picture doesn't do it justice, but she's got the prettiest eyes I think you'll ever see of anybody. They're blue. And when she smiles at you, it's just something else. This is Jose here. He's the maintenance man. And we had an awful time teasing him because we were all guessing how old he was. And I put him, 55 maybe, and Blue was guessing around that. And I don't know what the other guys guessed, but poor Jose, he's only 41. He is, so. But this fella can work. And he knows what he's doing. This is his son, David. I met his wife for a second, but these two kids I never really met. But David was over at the orphanage a lot. And as you see, we took T-shirts over last year. Austin gave us a bunch of T-shirts from Holland College to take over. And David's got one of them on there. So Jose's their maintenance man, and he works there full time. Quite a hood ornament, isn't it? So I thought that was just kind of neat. I put that one up. Fennel's getting ready to load the luggage on the van. Once again, tons of owls around that place. They're sitting on the walls and everything, so they were all over the place. This is the only picture I had of Tom Clark. I didn't even have one of Carol, but that's Tom, and he's the founder and the main man. He spends most of his time talking with the government people. It's just a full-time job. He keeps an eye on the school, but that's one of Mark's responsibilities, that Mark is going to be looking after more of the program there, so it'll free Tom up a little bit. And that's the crew the night we were leaving. And I never met Audrey in my life, and I never seen her, a picture of her, till about a month before we left. So, but that's Mark's sister, Audrey, and Mark and Kim, and a few more of the crew. It is. Now, this little picture I put in because this little girl here, oh, she won my heart over. This is Jenny, and she's 12 years old, and I got the, anyways, I can hardly talk about it, but she's a cute little girl. She's one of the few girls there that don't have any background that comes with her. Most of the kids there either come out of a situation where they're abused or neglected, and more so on the abuse side of things. But Jenny, as Mark was saying, she's just unfortunate that her family got too big. She was looked after. They didn't have anywhere to go, so the orphanage she came. So she was, I kind of befriended her a little bit and enjoyed spending the time with her. English was limited, but it's amazing what a few hugs will do. This little boy here, I know we were praying for him last year. This is Daniel. He's the boy that had all the troubles down below, and I don't know all the correct lure, but he didn't have a rectum, and he couldn't pee right, and they've been fixing that up, and he's at the point now where he's not 100%, but he's getting awful close, so he's a cute little fella. But, it's funny when you see him there compared to last year, you can see him growing up a little bit, so. And once again, that's Carlos, just teaching the Sunday school and getting some help from there. Fennel with the glass. I looked at that picture. I said, I got to show that again. Why didn't Fennel borrow Oral's glasses instead of Audrey's? So, but we're back to the crew there again. So we got a little slideshow that we want to show you. It's about 8 minutes long, I think. But it just kind of captions the week that we had. But we just want to thank the assembly for praying for us and for while we were gone. It was a great experience, and we enjoyed ourselves. And we were leaving there and said, we're all ready to go back. We really liked what we did, and we felt like we accomplished something for the Lord. And they're in the schoolhouse now, and it's up and running. So that was one of the things. When I phoned Mark back in November asking him how much help he had for the school, he said, we have two people. Phoned him in December, we have two people. Phoned him in early January, and still got two people. And I said, well, at least we're coming over with a few more, Mark, to help. So we'll slow a little slideshow, and then I'll come up and close in prayer. Thank you.
faithful Father, enduring friend, your tender mercies like a river with no wind. It overwhelms me, covers my sin. Each time I come into your presence, I stand in wonder once again. Your grace still amazes me. Your love is still a mystery. Each day I fall on my knees, 'cause your grace still amazes me. Your grace still amazes me. My eyes can see you.
there is pain in this life. We've all seen our share of tears. But I choose to live on the positive side, and I won't be held hostage by fear. I'm a prisoner of hope, bound by my faith, chained to your love, locked up in grace. I'm free to lead, but I'll never go. I'm wonderfully, willingly, freely a prisoner of hope. Some people doubt what they don't understand, but I know what's true in my heart. Now I can't control what's out of my hands, but I can lay back in your arms. I'm a prisoner of hope, bound by my faith, chained to your love, locked up in grace. I'm free to leave, but I'll never go. I'm wonderfully, willingly, freely a prisoner of hope. I'm a prisoner of hope, bound by my faith, chained to your love, locked up in grace. I'm free to leave, but I'm wonderfully, willingly, freely a prisoner of hope, bound by my faith, chained to your love, locked up in grace. I'm free to leave, but I'll never go. I'm wonderfully, willingly, freely a prisoner.
Let's pray. Our Father, we just thank you again for this time we can come out here tonight. We thank you for the work that Mark and Kim are doing over in this little spot of the world in Peru. We just pray that you will show them a blessing even tonight and let them to know that people as far away as Charlottetown are praying for them. And we just thank you for that they have the desire to be over there. They've left so much behind and the struggles have not been easy, but they realize that you are preparing a way for them each day. And we just pray that we can be a support to them here. We thank you for the opportunity and privilege that we've had to go over there, some of us, and for the support that we've got from this assembly itself. We thank you for that. And just pray that as each one of us go out of this door tonight, that when we go out, that we will be an example for the Lord Jesus. Help our convictions to be stronger and our love for him to be better. And once again, we just thank you for him. And we want to say tonight that we love him. We just ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, everyone.